are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Expressed on this program are the responsibility of those who make them. They do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates. And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. It's a good place to be. I'm delighted to be here, and I'm glad you're here. Those of you joining us for the first time tonight, welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. Be sure you go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and subscribe to our free weekly newsletter. You'll see it in red letters. Just click that and subscribe. It takes about 10 seconds. Truly free. You can unsubscribe anytime you desire to do so. Well, if you've been following the news, then you know, and some of you follow the news and you only follow the, you know, major media stuff. If you do, you're going to miss most of the world. But some of you follow the news through news groups and so forth, and if you have been following the news, you know that just like we talked last night with someone from Texas, who a constable, who is a witness to the massive UFO that was sighted there, just as that's happened in the Stephenville, Texas area. There are also sightings that have been taking place around the San Antonio, Texas area. That's making the news. And I didn't hear from anybody from San Antonio last night, as far as I know. But one of our radio affiliates there, the Dewberry Jam Radio Group, certainly some of those listeners may have seen some of these objects that have been sighted around San Antonio. I have a report here from Puerto Rico, and this happened back on January the 18th, just a few days ago. January the 18th, 4 days ago, 10:15 p.m., there was an enormous classic flying saucer-type object reported in southwestern Puerto Rico. And it says, the report says there were hundreds of rows of red lights surrounding it. Now, imagine the size of the thing if there were hundreds of rows. Now, that may be hyperbole, but nevertheless, it was massive. And what happened was that the people that saw it saw that this object rested for several minutes just above a nearby hill close to them, very low altitude, nearly treetop level, blinding witnesses with its red lights, according to the report. There was a couple that tried to take a photograph of the object with their cell phone, but it didn't turn out because of the bright lights. Other local residents were frightened and unable to sleep that night after the object took off towards Lajas at high speed. The witnesses said this is not the first case that they've seen in area at this hour of the night. They said that the object made no sound whatsoever. So the point is, and it's a pretty interesting point, actually, it seems that there are a lot of sightings of UFOs happening around the world right now, and a lot of them are massive in size. What is up? Well, we're going to be asking my guest in just a few minutes, Dr. Stephen Greer of the Disclosure Project. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to alienseekernews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today. Okay, folks, this is what you've been waiting for, your vacation of a lifetime. It awaits your arrival down under in beautiful and historic Hobart, Tasmania. And to make sure your holiday really is a dream come true, you'll be staying at the Bath Street Apartments. Here are just a few of the things that you'll enjoy in your home for the holidays. Stunning water and mountain views from all windows and from your own private balcony or veranda. Modern furnishings, a full modern kitchen with all new appliances, oven and hot plates, fat-free grill, full-size refrigerator, large-capacity microwave oven, cappuccino machine, dishwasher, and enough crockery, cutlery, and utensils to satisfy anyone's culinary desires. The lounge room has an extensive range of electronic home entertainment equipment, including, now get this, a big-screen TV, free digital satellite, pay TV on Foxtel AllStar with over 60 channels, DVD, video, wireless broadband connection, free local telephone calls from the in-room telephone with your own private telephone number so loved ones and friends can call you directly. The bathroom? Wow, the bathroom has a large spa bath, separate shower cubicle, ceiling-mounted heat lamp and fan and hairdryer, and it just gets better and better. Folks, you've got to see Bath Street Apartments, so click the banner over on the Kevin Smith Show website, or just go to bathstreetapartments.com.au. Your dreams are awaiting your arrival. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. Kevin Smith here. Do you have your Kevin Smith Show t-shirt yet? No? Well, let today be the day you step into the world of galactic fashion. Visit the Kevin Smith Show online store and get yours today. My guest this evening is someone known to, I would bet money, known to absolutely every one of you, Dr. Stephen Greer, not only involved with and the leader of, the founder of, and that may be incorrect, he may correct me when we bring him on, the Disclosure Project, but also he's involved in a lot of other really neat stuff that we'll get to talk with him about this evening. Dr. Greer, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Was I correct or incorrect in saying you're the founder of the Disclosure Project? What title do you use?
Yes, that's correct. I'm the founder and director of the Disclosure Project, which had started as Project Starlight, if you look at the FOIA request that went into the White House during the Clinton years when we began briefing the president and his first CIA director on this issue, trying to get them to support bringing out the truth to the people back in the 90s. And so, yes, it was founded way back in 1993, and I've been the founder and head of it since then.
Well, in 2001, you rocked a big boat with the Disclosure Project press conference, and you've continued rocking big boats in a big way with Disclosure Project. And the first thing I want to say is we all owe you a debt of thanks for your work with that.
Well, it's a labor of love by everyone involved, and it's not just myself, but it's the hundreds of military and intelligence and corporate witnesses that we have, that people can see some of that at disclosureproject.org, and all the dozens of volunteer staffers we have. You know, one thing people don't realize is that we have no paid staff. Everything we have done, as much work as it's been, has all been through volunteer efforts. So it's been an amazing effort of volunteerism.
I just want to ask this one question that's a little bit offbeat, maybe, before we go on, because I've seen you on television, I've heard you on radio interviews, and I have never heard this question asked. Probably it has been, but I haven't seen and heard all of your interviews.
All right.
But you're a medical doctor. You were an ER physician. What moved you from the ER to the forefront of the disclosure movement? How did that happen?
It's a very long story. Well, actually, this is the subject of my new book called Hidden Truth, Forbidden Knowledge, which people can get at disclosureproject.org. And it's that book is Hidden Truth, Forbidden Knowledge, just as the title says, is, you know, what I've discovered, the hidden truth on these issues and the forbidden knowledge and sciences that we have discovered on the way. But my interest began, and I describe this in the book, when I was a child. And my uncle, who was the senior project engineer at Grumman Aerospace, who designed the lunar module that took the first man to the moon, Neil Armstrong to the moon, that was my uncle, my mom's oldest brother, who was the senior project aerospace engineer for that whole effort. And so I had a real interest in space as a little boy. I was only, you know, when he started on that, maybe 8 or 9 years old. And so, you know, for me, it was just fascinating. And around that same time, I was near my home in Charlotte, North Carolina, which had a missile plant at the time. And we know now that there, most of the nuclear missile facilities were being observed by our extraterrestrial friends because they were concerned that we were going to blow this planet apart and become eventually a threat to other civilizations in space. And I was this little boy with some friends in the neighborhood and saw one of these extraterrestrial vehicles. I never called them UFOs because they're not unidentified and they don't fly. But at any rate, I saw this object, and it was broad daylight, and it was a seamless, metallic, a disc-shaped object not that far away, and it was there, and then it vanished. It didn't fly away like you see an airplane. I mean, it literally, you would say, dematerialized, but it vanished from physical view.
Just blanked out,
I knew what
out,
I had
huh?
seen. And so, you know, this is broad daylight. And, of course, my parents thought that, well, he's a kid. You know, he didn't see anything. Well, I did. I knew what I had seen. So that ignited a lifelong interest in this subject. And then a lot of other things subsequently occurred. But let's just say that I've had a very strong interest in this since childhood and have had multiple sightings over the years of these objects, and in 1990 decided to found the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, CSETI, which is the parent organization of the Disclosure Project. And, you know, our first mission was really to go out and to establish teams to make contact with these visitors for peaceful interplanetary contact, because I had concluded that they were in fact peaceful and that they were wanting to have some people figure out how to make open contact. So we started this process and ended up having amazing events that were mass witnessed in Florida and in Belgium and in England and in Mexico and all over. And word of this spread up through the chain of command of the classified projects in the U.S. government. And I was approached by some people, including the head of Army Intelligence, who said, basically, what the hell are you doing? Because this was actually making its way into the media with photographs and videotapes of these objects that we were vectoring in using a whole set of protocols that we train people to do this. And eventually, of course, a friend of the CIA director approached me at a presentation I had made in 93 and said, look, you know, they're very interested in this, but the president, the new president at that time was Bill Clinton, had taken office in January of 93, and his CIA director are being denied access to this information. Well, I thought this was a complete bold-faced lie at the time, and it turned out he was telling me the truth, and Jim Woolsey, who was the CIA director at the time, was completely denied access to these super-secret projects, because basically these projects have become part of this permanent government bureaucracy that pretty much views our elected and appointed leaders as sort of temporary dwellers of the office, and don't tell them anything. So, you know, the public, you know, often say, well, why is the government keeping this secret? I say, well, the government, quite frankly, couldn't find their rear end in a well-lighted room with both hands on this issue. Because I have done briefings personally for the members of the Senate Intelligence Committee and members of the Foreign Relations Committee and senior members of the House National Security Committee and the CIA director and on. And those people are genuinely clueless. I mean, they know less than you do about this issue. And it's really a tragedy. And it's a complete, this is what convinced me in the early 90s that the management of the secrecy on this issue was completely rogue and illegal and was a serious threat to democracy and to our Constitution and to our freedoms. And so kind of what Eisenhower had warned us about when he said, beware the military-industrial complex, operative word industrial complex, because they will get out of control and be a threat to our security and to our democratic institutions. And actually, you know, when Eisenhower said that, I didn't know until many years later, because a man who had worked with Eisenhower, an attorney in North Carolina who's now retired, and he was working as a young man in the White House Signal Corps. He's one of our witnesses. You can see his testimony in our disclosure book, which you can get at disclosureproject.org. This man said that he had seen Eisenhower being denied information and control over these projects, even though he knew about it. I mean, he had seen the bodies, he had seen the recovered craft from some of these downings of these ET craft that we had committed back in the 40s and 50s, but he admitted he had no control over this thousand-headed Medusa that had been spawned after World War II that were controlling these projects. And that's why he said that on the last day of his leaving office in 1961, Eisenhower warned the public about it, and it was because he knew that during his tenure from 1953 to 61, those 8 years that he was the President of the United States as a five-star general and Republican, he had completely been outfoxed by these characters and had lost control of these projects, and it's been downhill ever since. I'll just tell you right now that it's a complete mess. And so, unfortunately, that's the state of the art of it. And when I learned that this was the case and that the real reason for the secrecy wasn't because people would freak out because there's intelligent life out in the universe besides on Earth, most people already accept that as a fact. Even the Vatican has come out and said as much. The issue was that they had figured out how these puppies ran around and what their energy and propulsion systems were, and if that was disclosed, it'd be goodbye oil, goodbye gas, goodbye coal, goodbye central utilities, goodbye internal combustion engines. Well, you're talking about you know, a huge revolution and transformation. And, you know, the big power players who kind of control the strings of the world economy would see their power spread more democratically around the world, because energy could be generated out of the space that you're sitting in. It's just like a heat pump that generates energy out of the thermal gradient of the temperature outside. So basically, you know, these advanced electromagnetic and anti-gravity propulsion systems, those were all figured out by the 50s. And that's why the secrecy was slapped so hard on the issue. And it wasn't because of national security. It was because they were trying to protect these rotten special interests, it's what I call the sort of the oil mafia and the transnational financial kleptocracy which runs the centralized economy of the world, and they don't want to really share that power. And that's it in a nutshell. And I'll be honest with you, this is, you know, the reason I ended up leaving my medical career after all the years of putting into it, and 10 years I was in this emergency department and running it at some times, is because I realized that our civilization is not going to turn the corner to become sustainable or just or peaceful or anything else so long as this secrecy prevails. And that's why we have to have disclosure, and that's why now we have formed an energy company to develop these technologies and bring them out to the public.
And I want to get into that in just a little bit, but let me ask you this now. We've seen several years now of concerted effort of the Disclosure Project, and I think the goals of the Disclosure Project are shared by most people who have an interest in UFOs, and I know you don't use that term, but that's a term we all understand.
Right.
So people that have an interest in them at any level, you know, are supportive, I think, of the Disclosure Project. But after all these years, where are we now in the process? Are we any closer to disclosure?
Well, what I tell people is that's already happened. I mean, you have to understand that when we did the Disclosure Project event in 2001, it was estimated somewhere between 300 million and 1 billion people saw that. It was the most watched webcast in the history of the Internet at the time. It just keeps going. And now the numbers of people who, and it spawned all over the world, Disclosure Project initiatives in Canada and England and Russia and Australia, all over. And it's just running. And most people, and the latest polls have shown, that more people now accept the fact that there's intelligent life out there, and that these UFOs, as you call them, are real, and that the government, some part of the government at least, is hiding this information. More people accept that as a fact than have voted for any president since Ronald Reagan was elected in 1980. So the point I make is this. We have, I think, succeeded in that. Now, what I tell people is that we need to go from the disclosure of the facts that these UFOs are real and that there are covert projects sitting on this information to now the next step. The next big step in disclosure is to bring forward the sciences and the technologies and the actual operating machines that will run your house and eventually your car with energy from the so-called zero-point energy field and from the environment and not from fossil fuels. And this is the crux of why the secrecy exists. And to solve it, we need to now come out with these technologies. And AERO, the Advanced Energy Research Organization, which we have founded, is working with a number of top engineers and scientists who understand these sciences to bring these technologies forward. And we hope in 2008 we're going to have some really major announcements on that front. And people can see what we're doing with AERO. It's AERO2012.com by going to that website and seeing what we're developing.
Yeah, and let me say, those the links to the Disclosure Project as well as AERO are on my website. So, folks, if you look at KevinSmithShow.com and just scroll down, right beside Dr. Greer's picture, you'll see the links. Just click on one of those or both of those and go visit those, and you'll see what he's talking about. Let me ask you this before we get into AERO. I've got some heavyweight questions for AERO after reading the material. It's very interesting. Some of the stuff that's happening right now has people saying, whoa, what's going on here? For instance, of course, there was the big event, Phoenix Lights, but that was back in the 90s. Now there's this...
Yeah, I was there when that happened, by the way. That was a CE-5. That was a close encounter of the fifth kind. We were actually in Phoenix and were setting up protocols to initiate contact when that event happened. And the epicenter of it was right over where we were. So we were there in real time. And actually, the footage of that ended up being put on the a videotape collection that we gave to members of Congress when the Disclosure Project was briefing members of Congress in 97. So, yeah, those events, and there continue to be events like that all over the world.
I would take it you don't buy the story that it was military flares.
Well, it certainly wasn't. Now, later, I have to tell you, later I do think they were. In other words, there was an event, I think around 8, I can't remember now, 8 or 8:30 in the evening in March of that year. That was the real McCoy. But later, they then put up flares in a configuration so they could concoct a cover story saying, oh, well, the things that, you know, the governor of Arizona and all these other people who've now come forward and come clean have seen were flares. But in reality, that was what they did for damage control.
Yeah.
We know, of course, it wasn't. And this is typical of what happens when they're trying to keep the lid on something that is important.
Well, now there's this big event down in Stephenville, Texas. They've seen something in the sky. It's been estimated to be about a mile long, half a mile wide. On the 18th, down in Puerto Rico, they had a sighting of a massive object in the sky. And it seems like there are more sightings and more of these massive craft or objects or whatever they are. What's up with all of the sightings of these massive objects? Is something going on?
Well, personally, I think that this is a continuation of a trend that began towards the end of the Cold War in late 80s and early 90s. If you remember, there were massive sightings involving tens of thousands of people in Belgium of this enormous triangular craft that was 3 football fields on each side. We went over there to observe this ourselves and to make contact, and ended up having one come a few hundred feet above our vehicle, signaling with us. And this happened, you know, in 1991, I believe it was, when we were over there. And what we see, I think, in this is that the visitors are trying to get somebody to respond intelligently. And this is what, you know, look, let's take a step back here. This has been going on for many, many years. Jimmy Doolittle, General Doolittle, in World War II, his nephew was a friend of mine, a medical doctor, and this medical doctor told me that his uncle told him directly that Roosevelt sent him over to the World War II theater of operations back in the 40s to investigate these things that were called Foo Fighters. And everyone says, oh, that's a rock group. Well, actually, originally, Foo Fighters were these objects that were seen over there. Hitler thought they were secret weapons of the Americans and British. We thought it was a secret weapon of Hitler's. It turned out it was neither. And Jimmy Doolittle, General Doolittle, came back to the White House and reported directly to Franklin Delano Roosevelt and said, these are interplanetary vehicles, and I am quoting. Now, that's now 60-some years ago. But what kind of response has human society had? Fear. It's like the day the Earth stood still with this overreaction and hyping of everything fear-based and all the movies in Hollywood. And no offense, but the whole UFO subculture is immersed in all this kind of superstitious fear and nonsense. Or covert secrecy or outright denial. Or worse, we have developed weapon systems to target them and try to shoot them down. There has not been a cogent, sane, rational response from humans. And that's what they're waiting for. And actually, when I founded CSETI, the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, in 1990, it was to create an initiative to not only provide disclosure of the subject to the public, but to provide a framework for contact that could be rational and peaceful and open, rather than the kind of response that they've had. And I think this is, we have to really, I turn your question around and say, they're out there, they're obviously wanting to make contact. What has been our response? Now, you know, people say, why don't they land on the White House lawn? And I say, well, they're not going to do that. They're waiting for humans to organize themselves around some kind of intelligent and peaceful response. And they've been waiting for at least 60 years for that.
And they may have to wait a while longer, too. We have to take a break. An intelligent response from humans. Now, that will be interesting. But we'll be back right after this break. Don't go away, folks. More with Dr. Stephen Greer. Welcome back. We are talking with Dr. Stephen Greer. Sorry I had to cut you off like that, but you were telling us the doctor that was, I believe you said, a grandson of...
Yes, he's a medical doctor who was the nephew of Jimmy Doolittle.
Here's a question I have, and it was caused by your comments about his report to Roosevelt. Here you've got a general, a highly respected general, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Reporting to probably the most powerful president this country has ever had.
Correct.
As close to an emperor, I guess, as we have ever had, Roosevelt. And still, we're in this quagmire that we're in with all of the... secrecy over the technology being locked down and so forth. Now, here's a question, because I want us to move into Arrow, but this is sort of a borderline. It's important on both sides, the disclosure thing and also Arrow.
Sure.
Does the disclosure movement have friends in Congress?
Oh, yes. In fact, I was just recently briefing a member of Congress, of the Congress who's running for president of the United States, who is enormously supportive of what we're doing, very interested. And, you know, the problem is that the subject is the target of so much ridicule in the mainstream media, particularly the big mainstream media like the New York Times and the Washington Post and Newsweek and Time and what have you, that people are afraid to step out on this issue because they're afraid they're going to be shellacked and called all kinds of names and trivialized the way Dennis Kucinich was when Shirley MacLaine started talking about the fact he had had a sighting at her house. So, unfortunately, the subject ends up being very difficult for these political types to deal with. If they can get over the ridicule fear, which of course is big and substantial, then they have to deal with the fact that if this is real, there's a very powerful, almost invisible, 10,000-pound gorilla sitting there that they're afraid might come and squish them. And I think that that's what happened to Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton after we put together the briefing materials for them, and that was provided to them at the Rockefeller Ranch back in the early 90s. And you know, I was the centrally involved with that from the get-go. And Lawrence Rockefeller was very much supporting the idea that this should be disclosed and wanted the president to take action. But President Clinton didn't want to do it for fear of not only ridicule, but fear of tangling with this very powerful transnational group of well-heeled people whose net worth is much eclipses the whole United States government's budget, quite frankly. So,
the good news on the media side, though, is that the public no longer puts a lot of faith or stock or even pays much attention to these big names in the media.
You're right, absolutely. But the blogosphere and the internet and everything else is overriding that.
Yeah, I don't know, you probably are aware of this, but the Edison Research Group, working with Arbitron, did a survey in which in 2007, they do this every year, but they asked, what is the most essential media to you? And newspapers were dead last at 11%. Radio dropped from, just in 1 year, they dropped from 29 down to 17%. Internet was up to 33%, and television was at 37%. But television was only at 37% when you add in the age group 44 and above. Well, every year, that group gets older, and more people drop off the back end of it.
Right.
And so within a couple of years, television is going to be in second place, and internet will be first. But in the group up to age 44, internet is first, way and above everybody else. And so it has passed. You know, this is one of the things that's interesting. And this is my opinion, my observation, but the American public has just run past all the cover stories and no longer really pays any attention to them.
Oh, that's what I'm telling people. I mean, this is when I get, you ask the question, well, you know, what about the disclosure happened? I said, which disclosure? This disclosure led by those of us who have all the data. I mean, you know, people are sometimes kind of silly. They think that somehow the President of the United States or the Chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee is going to disclose this subject. And as the CIA director said to me right to my face, he says, how do we disclose what we don't have access to? And I said, well, for God's sakes, you get access, and I'll give you the project code names and code numbers. If you want some of them, get the book Disclosure, and there are documents in there that have some of them as of the 1990s, and I know they're valid because I had an admiral who was the head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff locate one of these secret operations in the Pentagon with one of those project code numbers, and they're in my book. And so go get it and read it and find you. So the point I'm making is this. We are encouraging people who are truly patriotic and believe in the rule of law not to stick with this red herring that they have to be secret any longer on this subject, because we have proven that the management of the secrecy is illegal, rogue, and outside the rule of law, and therefore they cannot cite the law to protect themselves or to enforce the secrecy. So the issue really becomes, are we courageous enough to disclose the truth we've found or that we have, if you're a military or former military operative or a corporate operative at Lockheed Skunk Works or what have you. And what we're telling people is, it's time to step forward and speak the truth and the people already are ready for it. And the old system that has been trying to clamp down all this information, it is just crumbling under their feet. And frankly, it should have never been instituted. You know, when I was with Senator Barry Goldwater back before he passed away, and I was at his home there in Scottsdale area of Phoenix, and he said to me, you know, and I don't want to curse, but he was a very salty character.
Yes, he
and
was.
He was saying, he said it was a damn mistake then, except he used a worse word than that, and a damn mistake now that this was ever made secret. And, you know, he went on and on. And, you know, this is a conservative Republican, of course, and, you know, and a military guy also. And you know, he and I talked about this for some hours privately. And what I found is that it doesn't matter if they're Democrat, Republican, this, that, or the other thing, most people are ready for disclosure, think this should have never been kept secret. The issue becomes who has access. What we did with the Disclosure Project, and this is very clever, was to basically create our own separate initiative outside the government, but that involved a lot of government whistleblowers and military and intelligence people, and who could paint a big mosaic. Maybe each of them only had a little piece of it, but we put it all together, and that's what's in our DVD. We have a four-hour DVD of these witnesses speaking. We have a two-hour DVD and this 600-page book. And people, anyone who can read the King's English and can look at a DVD can see this. And it's been seen, by the way, on the internet, on YouTube, and everywhere else by just countless millions of people. And so what I say to people is that we the people, and I tell people, I'm very strong on this. My mother's family were some of the original founders of the United States, and in fact, they were the original POWs with the British in the Revolutionary War. And I think we have a right to encourage these people to break ranks with this illegal secrecy, not legal secrecy, but illegal secrecy that has escaped off the radar scope of the oversight of not only presidents in the past, but the Congress and other key people, and where they have subverted the rule of law. That is not what this country was founded on. And so it is a patriotic thing to do, to break ranks with this kind of illegal secrecy that Eisenhower himself warned us about.
All right. Now, when I asked that question about do we have friends in Congress, does the disclosure movement have friends in Congress, I said it's kind of a borderline question, and here's what I meant. You see, the answer to that also plays a big role, I think, in the success of Arrow, because some of the technology that Arrow is wanting to develop and to deploy to the public is, it's technology that has been suppressed and is likely to continue to be suppressed. And I read on your site some of the categories of suppression. Now, some of those categories I can see how a private organization can work around. Murdering the inventor. Well, Arrow can, you know, provide protection for the inventor.
And we are. And not only that, but the way you protect, and by the way, if there's anyone who is an inventor who has a breakthrough technology, they should contact me at arrow2012.com, because we have a growing number of people. And the way that they're protected is that they quit playing the secrecy game. They work cooperatively with the network. And let me tell you, for every person who would support disclosure on the UFO and ET issue, there are 1,000 VIPs in Congress and in the corporate world who would support a new energy technology to reverse global warming, to get us off Mideast oil, to create abundance, to create green-collar jobs, to resurrect our crumbling economy. And so my point to you is this, is that for as many people as we've been able to reach who are in government and corporate and in the celebrity world, quite frankly, who are interested in the UFO issue, there are 1,000 that are interested in this energy and environmental issue. And what we have found, and we found this increasingly, that I just had a meeting in Washington on Sunday with people who were there representing the most senior brass at the Pentagon, who are eager for us to help them get hold of technologies to help the white hats in the Pentagon with figuring out how to get us off Mideast oil and et cetera and so on. Because here's something that'll shock your listeners. Most of the people who are the senior flag officers, your senior generals and admirals who are in the military, they don't have access to those projects either. And when they try to find out about them, they're told to bug off. I had an admiral who was the head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and I had a man who walked on the moon with me and Eisenhower's aide and a bunch of other people at this briefing. And he told me personally that when he located through this project code numbers I'd given him that are in our book, Disclosure, that anyone can get, when he located that compartmented cell at the Pentagon, and he wanted to be briefed on what they were doing, they said, sir, this is to the admiral, sir, we cannot discuss this with you. And he pressed them, and he said, sir, they said, we will not discuss this with you under any circumstances, and they cut the line. This to an admiral who is in charge of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
I hate to do it. We have to take a break, and when we come back, we will continue.
Everything about the days before you came along, I'd be painting perfect pictures on my canvas of years to be. Around I went looking through my windows out on nothing. My whole world narrowed to the size of a couple of pages in my book.
Did you know The Kevin Smith Show selects one of its very best shows each week and turns it into a free podcast? Well, it's true. You can download free Kevin Smith Show podcast right now and get a free fresh podcast each week. Do you want to start building your own library of Kevin Smith shows? All you have to do is visit our website at kevinsmithshow.com and click the free podcast link. They're yours for the download. We're back, and we're talking with Dr. Stephen Greer. So, Dr. Greer, when we had to cut away for break, you're telling us about this admiral who was told, basically, go mind your own business.
Correct. And, you know, it was sort of a... He was hopping mad by the time, not at me, but he was furious by the time I went to this briefing. I had provided this data to him prior to the briefing. It was a stand-up briefing at the Pentagon. And what I found, and this was a real education for me, being, I tell people, I'm just a country doctor from North Carolina originally, and what I found in my journeys through this whole business, which has taken me to the pinnacle of government and power all over the world, is that it doesn't really matter what your rank is. It matters whether you've been brought up through that system of secrecy for this particular subject. And otherwise, if they don't want you to know, it doesn't matter if you're the president or the CIA director or the Secretary of Defense or the Senate Intelligence Committee chairman. It really doesn't matter. And that's what's so shocking to people who are on, you know, the normal civilian out there who took their civics lesson in high school or middle school. That whole system has been tossed aside by this cabal, and it's a tragedy, and it's enormously illegal. But the point I'm making is that a lot of people think that there's not support for disclosure. There is, but there's even more support for these technologies coming forward, because as I mentioned, for every person who's interested in life in outer space and whether they're visiting us here, there are 1,000 people worried about this economy and $100 a barrel oil and the damage to the environment, et cetera, and so on, and one war after another coming down the pike as we begin to fight like Mad Max under the Thunderdome for the tanker full of oil. So I think that what we have found with the energy initiative is that there's many times much more support for that than there is for the disclosure on the UFO and ET issue, even though the secrecy for the one is identical to the secrecy of the other. The reasons for the secrecy are virtually identical. It's all about geopolitical power, who has it, and who's going to keep it. So that's what it's about. I mean, you know, it's not even about money the way you and I think of money. Mm-hmm. You and I think about money like, well, do we have enough money to put our kids through school? And I got 4 kids in college. But these folks think of it in terms of power and control of the planet. And that's really what their currency is.
All right. Now, let's take that and springboard to Arrow. On this show, I interview some of the smartest people on this planet who really have some great ideas about how to move us into these new technologies, and some of them actually involved in the development of these new technologies. Mm-hmm. Here's a problem. One of the people that I have interviewed on this show, I won't use a name, but one of the people that I've interviewed on this show has a whole bunch of patents, but even more that have been taken black under that Section 181 and national security. All right, now you're going to face that. How, and on your website, Arrow 2012, and I devoured it. Just fascinating information here. Here you've got an inventor, and he's come up with invention A, whatever it is, and it's clean energy. How do you keep this from happening to that invention?
The same way that we had 110 top secret military and corporate and intelligence people come forward with top secret documents, many of which were not declassified, and not a single one of them to this date, 6 or 7 years later, have gotten so much as a phone call threatening them. And the reason for it is that we've got the system in place through the masses, through people who are friendly to the idea of disclosure, who are in these power circles. About 70% of this cabal that has been keeping this stuff secret now want to see this stuff out. The other 30% are pretty ruthless characters. But in this world, everyone wants to be first, to be second. In other words, no one wants to stick their necks out. What we have done is set up a system that's both strategic and tactical security so that this can be protected. And I also have to emphasize that this whole question about the patenting is a matter of strategic clumsiness. And let me give you an example. You don't make a claim in a patent that's going to trigger Section 181 of the patent law until you have other things in place. And these other things in place are the following. And this is what Arrow is going to do. And this is all happening all at the same time. Once we have a device that works, and we know it works, it's going to go through multiple independent scientific labs to be tested and reproduced. In real time, all that data is being sent to this huge strategic network we have, which include ambassadors, heads of state, A-list movie stars that I'm not going to list, but if I name them, everyone listening would know who they are, who are friends of ours, and we know who they are, and who are willing to go the distance with us with bringing this technology out for the environment and for the future of humanity. Then, when you have all that ready, you do a national press club event. We've already engaged the PR firm, and you light up this enormous network where you have a billion or 2 billion people watching this device operate in front of them. And it's covered all over the world on the internet. It is live streaming. It's everywhere. And at that instant, you press the button and transmit your patent application to the patent office, and you dare them to black box this thing. They're not going to do it. Now, here's the problem. The inventors and the engineers need to team up with the strategic powerhouses that we've put together who want to see this stuff out. Nobody is going to bring one of these devices out of their garage or laboratory and make it through this minefield of obstacles by themselves. And this is why, you know, it's this old saying, God loves those who work together. You've got to put together the right elements. And so what we're doing is putting together these strategic elements, security elements, prime movers in society with the engineers and scientists so that there is an umbrella of protection around that knowledge, around that scientific device, so that it all comes out in a coordinated fashion. It can't be done any other way. If you try to do it, a lot of people think, oh, I've built a better mousetrap, the world will beat a bath in my door. Well, I got news for you, Murder Incorporated or a knock on the door from someone else will come there first. So you've got to have the strategic reach and clout, I hate to use that word, to be able to do this and to do it well and professionalize the process. And that's what Arrow is doing. I'm very confident that whatever the technology is that anyone has out there, if it is a way of generating energy that can be a practical value to the world, we can protect it and we can get it out there and we'll be able to succeed in doing that. I have chairmen of Senate committees ready to stand up with one of these devices when it's unveiled. And I mean, you're not going to, I don't care how much you think you control the media, like you pointed out, with the internet, with webcasting, with the international media, hell, Al Jazeera will be there covering it. I don't care. You know, there's no way you're going to see, you know, what we're going to do is squeeze the tube so hard that the toothpaste goes out of there like a rocket, and you're not going to put that toothpaste back in. Now, you have to coordinate this very carefully. It's expensive. It's a virtuoso act of strategic planning. Our strategic plan to carry this thing out around any device, even an entry level device, is 39 pages long, where each line is a major strategic action bullet. And it's 39 pages. But you're not going to do it any other way. And this is the problem. Most of the people think that they just need more money. What they really need is more strategic capital. They need this network. And that's what Arrow has, and that's what our group has developed over the last 17 years. I mean, it's okay, not for nothing.
Let me, we're headed into the top of the hour break, and then we'll have a long time to talk before there's another
break.
But let me just do this. If there are inventors that have this type of technology, how do they get in touch with you?
Contact me at arrow2012.com and let us know. And there is actually a way there, a section of the website for inventors and engineers who understand these technologies.
And let me say, for those of you who are like me, you're just, you know, one of the interested individuals, you've really got to go see this website and read the information that's on the website. It is exciting stuff. If you understand what it is they are doing and what they plan to do, it's really exciting stuff. Now, when we come back on the other side of this break, I've got a couple of more questions about some of these methods of suppression and how you get around them, because they're pretty sticky. And you're playing in the major leagues here. I mean, we are,
but we have major league players on our team, and that's what I want to emphasize. We have major league players on our team, and I don't believe at this point that if someone has the real deal in the way of these technologies, and we're working with some people who are in the final home stretch of developing these things, and we're looking for more, I don't think there'd be any way for that to succeed unless they took the whole planet to DEFCON 5.
Yeah. Ooh, I hope they don't do that. All right, we'll be back on the other side of this break with more with Dr. Stephen Greer, and we'll open the telephone lines for you to call when we come back. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
I'll be there in the morning light.
Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
Welcome to the second hour of the Kevin Smith Show. Those of you who are just now joining us, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. My guest this evening, Dr. Stephen Greer, and we're talking at this point about a new organization, fairly new. It's not brand new, but what, July of last year, right?
Yeah, August of 07, yeah.
August of 07. A new organization that Dr. Greer has formed called AERO, and tell us again what that stands for.
Advanced Energy Research Organization, and it is at AERO, A-E-R-O, 2012.com.
Now, the we were talking about some of these tactics of suppression that all of us know about. I mean, we all either have heard about them or at least suspect them.
Dr. Bearden has documented quite a few of them in his books and writings as well.
Now, one of them that you list on your site is the systematic interception of funds and essential financial support needed to develop and put into mass application such a fundamental new energy source.
Right. And here's the mistake there, and here's how you fix it. Basically, what people have done is that they'll try to go to a corporation or one well-heeled individual to fund this, and then those people end up being approached, and they either buy out that interest or threaten that person, or otherwise defame the inventor or the technology, and they steer them away from it. What we plan to do is democratize that whole process. And I'm not talking an IPO either, an initial public offering where you have to go through the SEC and every other crook. Basically what you do is that if you have a prototype that works, just like if you come out with a new Lamborghini, you say, look, you light up this system and you put it to people and say, here's something that works. It's been reproduced. It's been tested at whatever, MIT or UCLA or some independent testing lab, and it's been tested three or four times. It's been reproduced. And we want the people to support this, and it will run your whole house. And instead of spending $50,000 or $80,000 on solar panels and windmills to run your house, this will be X amount, and put half of that towards this now or a deposit, and then you pull in millions of people or at least thousands of people, and you democratize the process, and you don't let one big financial player tie it up. This is a mistake that keeps happening over and over and over again, and it's because you really need to give this to the people, but you need to be able to reach the people. You need to be able to articulate it. You need to have a well-run event like we did at the National Press Club for Disclosure. You need to have prime movers and celebrities. I've met with two members of royal families in Europe who are ready to have their palaces run on these systems if we can get one that works and is robust enough. And what happens then is that you do not have the ability to suppress that because you're not trying to get funding from one government entity or one corporate entity or one rich person who can then have someone come in and say, hey, buddy, don't do that, and if you do, this will happen, because the people out there, first of all, there's too many of them to approach. You take this out of these sort of what I call chokehold points in the strategy that have failed. And what we have done, and I've sat with people like Dr. Bearden and others, and basically looked over the past 100 years at why these technologies have started to emerge and then vanished, and then developed strategic plans to go around that. A stranglehold, and that's what you've got to do. And see, this is where I can't do this by myself. We have an enormously large network of strategic thinkers from every walk of life, interdisciplinary, working with us. Because and the problem is, your brilliant inventor or engineer sitting in a lab or in his garage who has something like this, they can't do that. We all have to do this together, and this is the point I'm making. Otherwise, there's no way that this can succeed, and it has to be an effort where the public is involved from the get-go. I mean, from the minute this thing is running and you have proven it independently, that gets streamed on the videotapes, and that gets on YouTube, and that's on the Internet site. I mean, you don't sit on this stuff. Because this is the mistake that all inventors make. They think that they're going to outfox these agents of secrecy by being clever and secretive themselves, when in reality, they're playing to the enemy's strengths, whereas our strength is disclosure. Our strength is getting it out to the masses. Our strength is getting millions, hundreds of millions, and even billions of people aware of something. That's what you have to do. And you know what? Most people out there, 99.999% of the human race, would love to see a solution to the oil crisis, the energy crisis, the environmental crisis. And even if it's just a good old boy trying to run his F-150 pickup truck and having to pay $80 every time to fill it up, they're, all those people are your friends. All those people are our allies. Those are our support base. And so if you can get the message out to them, then, and shows like yours will be important, Kevin. If you can get that out to them, then it's not going to be easy to either suppress. And financially, you don't try to go to the big, what I call vulture capitalists, until it's a fait accompli, meaning that it's a done deal, there are too many people know about it, and there are too many people supporting it, and they're voting with their pocketbooks, and they're voting with their efforts, and you've got 50,000 of these things out running people's homes, and you can't squeeze this toothpaste back into the toothpaste.
You can't put the genie back in the bottle.
Then, my friend, you're going to have these big players will then come around, because it'll be an inevitability. They're not going to go quietly into this big transformation, not when it's going to change the way that they can control everybody. So you have to, and I'm a big believer that, and I because I've seen this happen in the past with our efforts, is that when you put this out there and you articulate it well and you prove what you have, you'll get the support from the people, and that's what we have to have.
Let's go to the phone line. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Mark from Nashport, Ohio.
Yes, Mark.
Dr. Greer, I've read both of your books and watched several of your DVDs. I'd like to thank you for all your great work. I have several quick questions, and I'll take the answers offline. First of all, have you had any repeat ET contacts? Secondly, could you comment on the concept of the unbounded mind or universal consciousness? And finally, do you believe in hollow earth theory? Thanks.
Okay. Mark, thanks for the call.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know too much about hollow earth theory. I will say that our contact events have continued to escalate. For example, we were in Joshua Tree National Park in November with about, I guess it was about 40 people. On a training expedition up there, and we had not only some amazing objects that we saw that were signaling to us with these lasers we were using, but we had a 25-minute download that was emanating out of the constellation Orion through our electronic systems in a unusual tonality and sequence that was all around the area where we were located, that lasted for 25 minutes, and we got a digital recording of this that we hope to have up on our website fairly soon at csetti.org, csetti.org. But this continues to happen. I have no doubt that the intelligent life forms in space that are out there are watching with great interest how we as humans collectively are developing. And the key, by the way, to all of the work we're doing is the understanding of the non-local nature of consciousness. He asked this question about the unbounded mind, and I think it's a very good one, and that is that the nature of the conscious mind that all of us are listening to this interview with, it's a single thing. There's not like Kevin's mind and my mind. There's our individualities, but the awareness itself, the conscious mind, is actually a singularity. And this is what Erwin Schrodinger said in the early 1900s, who was the father of a particle wave theory that became quantum physics. He said, the total number of minds in the universe is one. That is, it is a singularity. And this has actually been proven scientifically. Now, the reason this is important is that there's a nexus where consciousness and mind stuff, if you will, and electromagnetism and spin and gravitational forces all come together. And it's a very interesting study. It's a bit esoteric. But, you know, when I put a paper together back in the early 90s discussing this, it ended up going through all the aerospace companies, and I had a man call me from McDonnell Douglas who had worked with old man McDonald himself. And he said, you don't know how right you are. And he later became one of our disclosure project witnesses, Dr. Robert Wood. And he said that the old man McDonald, who was very interested in the whole ET presence, was also very interested in the unbounded aspect of awareness, and he said that they had discovered in the 60s that there was this nexus where energy and matter and conscious awareness and thought and all this comes together, and that these extraterrestrial civilizations, by virtue of being interstellar and traveling faster or beyond the speed of light, understand this very well. And some people say, well, you're now crossing over into mysticism. And I said, well, you know what? If you go deep enough in the physics, it becomes very mystical. But the reality
is... Well, that is true. But, you know, one of the definitions of paranormal, a term that we use on this show a lot, is simply anything for which there is no current scientific explanation. And that's most everything in the universe.
Well, but that's a misnomer in the sense that what we're talking about now is scientifically understood very well. There has been very good research on the nature of mind and consciousness and how it is non-local, meaning that it's actually an omnipresent field of awareness. And, you know, you can be trained in meditation. In fact, we have a meditation CD that helps people get to that state of awareness, because I think it's very important that people understand that that is the key, is bringing that level of understanding of the true nature of ourselves and consciousness into this that's going to solve these problems. So as Einstein said, no problem was ever solved from the level of consciousness that created it. So we're going to have to go into these states and understand what it really means to be cosmically aware.
Let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. Yes, this is Kevin from Iroquois Falls. How are you doing?
Fine. How are you this evening?
I'm doing all right. And how are you doing, Mr. Greer?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
All right. Yes. Was there anything mentioned in any of the disclosure project about a UFO crash up in Northern Ontario, Canada, back in 1954?
Northern Ontario, Canada. I don't know that we have anyone directly related to that event, but we do know that there have been dozens, if not hundreds, of these events all over the world.
Yeah, because
you have information on that, or are you someone who witnessed that?
My great grandfather's brother actually witnessed the crash.
Right.
Yeah, it was about 75 miles north of here. Him and two friends were gone hunting, and they saw the crash.
Do they think it was what we call an ARV, an alien reproduction vehicle made by our aerospace industry, or do they think it was an ET vehicle?
Well, by his description, it was a flying disc of fire that crashed about 3 miles north of where they were. And they went to investigate it, and they were told afterwards not to say anything, because while they were on the way to go check it out, there were three Canadian Air Force planes and two American Air Force planes that flew towards there as they were walking towards where the crash site was, and they were told to keep their mouths shut about it. He only said that they saw some disc crash 3 miles north of where they were, and they were told to keep their mouths shut. That was, I believe, in September of 54.
Well, that's great. I mean, it would be great if we could find any living witnesses to that. We know this has happened many places. One of the things that we're always trying to discern, whether it's a sighting like that happened in Texas recently or what have you, is it something that is a extraterrestrial vehicle, which is what NSA people call them, ETVs, or is it something that is being made by some of our friends at Lockheed or Northrop or some of these other super secret engineering and contracting entities? Because you have to understand, there have been prototypes of so-called electrogravitic or anti-gravity craft that are man-made since at least the late 1940s to early and mid-1950s. I have a photograph of one being test flown over Provo, Utah, taken by a military captain back in the early 60s that was a man-made one. So we do know that these have existed and they are man-made. And so the question always becomes, you know, is it real or is it Memorex? Is it an extraterrestrial vehicle? Or is it one of our guys? And they can be very hard to distinguish apart if you don't have the information to know that there's the possibility that it could be man-made. I'm not saying that all of these sightings are man-made, but believe me, but I'm saying that some of them are, and some of the crashes have probably been early prototypes that went amok and crashed. And so then the question, now mind you, that's as big a story as the question about the extraterrestrial ones crashing, because you know, the fact that there would be something man-made that would be performing that way and look like that would be quite an important story and disclosure as well, because it would prove what we're stating, that Nick Cook, who wrote the book The Search for Zero Point, and who published this information in Jane's Defense Weekly in the aftermath of all the work we were doing with disclosure, and that's a very prestigious defense journal, and he said basically this stuff was pretty open source until the early 50s, and then it went all black. I was just meeting with a man at the Naval Research Labs recently who said that he has found the same thing, that basically when they figured out how these things work, that in 1954 everything went off the radar scope, super secret black. But before that, there were actually some open source information on these anti-gravity propulsion systems.
Let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Trey in Atlanta.
Yes, Trey.
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Greer, for coming on the show. Thank you for the 15 years of hard work you've done.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We all appreciate it.
Thank you.
I want to disagree with you on one thing and then ask you a question. The thing I'll disagree with you about is I've noticed a couple of different documentaries that have shown aliens are definitely watching our nuclear launch bases. Okay, we know that. And
sure. They've been concerned about that madness for a long time.
Yeah, and in my opinion, I could be wrong. In my opinion, I believe they're not worried about us destroying the planet. They're worried about us destroying each other. Now, you know, I'm not saying launching nuclear bombs into the atmosphere is good, but I would think that they would have stopped us from doing all those thousands of practice bombs in China and so on and so forth, if that was what their main concern was. What I wanted to ask you...
Well, yeah, you're correct. You're making a very good point. And,
okay.
And their primary concern is that they do not want to see human civilization be knocked back to the Stone Age, because I believe, and this is my own personal assessment looking at information going back thousands of years on this issue, is that I think the human civilization has been watched, perhaps has been protected for many thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of years or more, and that there is an interest in the cosmos of humanity and our civilization continuing to advance and civilization advancing peacefully. And I think that, of course, when you're facing an existential threat such as a global thermonuclear war or a major environmental ecosystem collapse from what's happening to the environment or what have you, that this is something that there's a great deal of concern about. And we know that from one of our witnesses in the Disclosure Project was a Colonel Dietrichson, who had been with the Atomic Energy Commission. And in his capacity, he was the guy overseeing all the nuclear weapons development facilities and storage areas and test facilities throughout the United States. And he said that every single one of those facilities had been observed by these extraterrestrial vehicles, because it was clear to him that while they weren't hostile, they were very concerned about our capacity to have our own unchecked hostility reach the point where we destroy ourselves in a major way. And I have heard this from so many military people, and yet none of them have told me that they felt that they were a threat to us, per se. But that, you know, and this is one of the things, you know, back in the 90s, I went from Lawrence Rockefeller's ranch, where we were doing all this stuff, to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, where I briefed the leaders of the, what was in the 40s, the Foreign Technology Division, that had become the National Air Intelligence Center. Later, and a colonel who was there, and one of the Air Force intelligence officers that I was meeting with, one of them asked, "Well, you know, what if these visitors are a threat to our civilization. I said, buddy, with all the stupid things we've done, targeting them, knocking them down using electromagnetic weapon systems in the 40s, that's how the ones at Roswell crashed, by the way, those didn't fall out of the sky, we knocked them down with an electromagnetic weapon system. That basically, if they were hostile, we would be a cinder floating through space at this point. I said, the fact that you and I are still breathing the free air of Earth is abundant testimony to the fact that they are essentially non-violent and non-hostile. However, I don't mean to say that they're not concerned with our hostility. And so I turned that question around on his head because they see that we have not only the propensity and the proven track record in this century to kill tens of millions of our own fellow humans, but also develop weapons that could destroy all of human civilization. And in addition, go into space with these weapons and become a threat to perhaps other innocent civilizations that are out there. So I think there's a prevailing interest for universal peace to occur and for that to be contained. I even think that to a certain extent, human civilization, until we become peaceful and civilized, is under some type of a quarantine. I have spoken to people in the space agencies and in some of the intelligence services who've made it quite clear to me that when we've tried to go with some of these experimental anti-gravity prototypes further out into our solar system, we've sort of been encouraged to turn around. And, you know, as you know from Timothy Good's book, Neil Armstrong was famously overheard telling someone about all the ET craft that were around the craters when we landed on the moon, which is true. But that, but he said, basically, he said, we were warned off the moon. They didn't want us there yet. And the implication was clear that, you know, until we became a peaceful civilization on this planet that could go into space, peacefully, that they really, these visitors, and I think who are quite evolved consciously and also socially, do not want to have a civilization that is still hell-bent on murdering each other going out into other star systems. I mean, it just makes common sense.
They kind, kind of view us as the Klingons, huh?
Well, no, but I think they see us as a primitive, evolving civilization that's trying to get out of the adolescent phase of our collective development into the early stages of maturity and adulthood. And of course, you know, this late adolescent phase that humanity is in is a potentially dangerous one, just like a, it's like, you know, it's like giving a teenage boy the keys to your Corvette. You know, and I think that they see us bamming around here, and I think there's some concern. So yes, we do know that they have had these sort of concerns, and that certainly the planet itself will take care of herself in the long run. But humanity is I think, has precious potential and great potential, and that is of some interest to, if you wish, the cosmic mind, but also to these visitors, and I think to all of us. And most human beings are good people. I mean, the vast majority of people, you travel all over the world, are good, peace-loving people who just want to, you know, have a good life and raise their children and educate them and have a good life. It's a relatively small element of our society that keep wanting to engage in violence and warfare and all of these things. So,
but they are immensely effective at involving all of us in it. Let's go back to the phone line very quickly. We've only got a couple of minutes before break, so if Dr. Greer is not able to answer your question before the break, we'll get it after the break. Caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Brent from Wyoming.
Yes, Brent?
Dr. Greer, I'm going to make two comments and then ask you to comment on them. On the universal consciousness, I will say that it is possible that everything in history is there. And for those who are trying to suppress us, I really feel sorry for them when we open that up.
Yep, all right.
And,
the truth reveals itself eventually, that's true.
And the other thing is that one of Tesla's techniques for developing his technology was lucid dreaming. If the people out
actually,
there...
Actually, there are... Yes, it is true that lucid dreaming can be augmented through technological systems. And I wrote back in the early 90s a paper discussing these interstellar civilizations that have technology-assisted consciousness devices, but also consciousness-assisting technologies. It goes both ways. And that actually communications across interstellar distances is a electromagnetic system that is phasing in a way that interfaces directly with consciousness and thought. And you're correct, you know, there's something called the Akashic Record in the mystical lore. But in truth, all knowledge of everything that has happened and that exists is encoded in the structure of deep consciousness and awareness. And anyone who sits in deep meditation can unravel that. And also, you can visit a place anywhere on the earth and sit in meditation and go back in time and see everything that's happened there. I also know that there is a naval electronics unit that developed a electronic system that could uncode or decode anything that had happened at any point in space, going back as far back as they wanted to run the system. And, you know, what most people don't realize is that the really highly classified things dealing with consciousness and electromagnetics have gone much further than people can imagine. And it's a very interesting area of exploration and discussion. It's unfortunate that it hasn't been used for the good, because it can be used for many, many good things. But
we have to take a break. All right, folks, the telephone line will be open on the other side of this break. 1-800-289-1092, toll-free throughout North America. We're also going to get to some flash messages that have come in from around the world. We shall return. Get it all Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
We are back. My guest this evening, Dr. Stephen Greer. And that's a name that the entire world knows. The telephone number, toll-free throughout all of North America is 1-800-289-1092. And if you live outside of North America, you can send a Flash message. It's an email. Just send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com. Dr. Greer, I've got one from Italy, and I'd like to go ahead and read that one to you. And let me say to the caller that I've just put on hold, please hold. We'll get to you. This one from Angelo in Italy says, would Dr. Greer agree that disclosure might be happening on a grassroots level first? And he says, by way of individual and deeply personal experience, such as contact of the third and fourth degree, to potentially guard against the military matrix from using the visitors for their own gain. And in other words, is it possible that disclosure is held up by the visitors themselves until a critical mass of awareness is reached so that the visitors are not used as a rallying for a worldwide lynch mob?
Well, I think that this has always been the problem, is that when people say disclosure, whose disclosure? The controllers who have been gaming war after war after war for the last zillion years, we don't want disclosure by those guys. And so I agree in part with what he's saying, and that is that there are millions of people around the world that have had sightings and contact, and that's why it's so hard to really deny the existence of the visitors. On the other hand, it's very important to recognize that I think that they are also waiting for us to organize as a society to admit that they're here and then have a rational response to their presence. So it's not just individual and idiosyncratic. They're not mutually exclusive processes. But in the absence of any organized response by our civilization, their only avenue they have had has been through this individual kind of one-on-one or small group having a sighting or what have you. And I think that that's really driven not so much by their timeline, but by our readiness to have any kind of organized and appropriate response. And by appropriate, I don't mean down the barrel of a laser weapon or something.
Yeah.
So I think that this is the issue, and I think that that's why it's happening. But I don't think at all that they are holding up disclosing their presence, but they're wise enough to know that they don't want to foist it on us. A lot of people have asked, I remember Larry King asking me years ago, why don't they land on the White House lawn? This is what everyone asked. Mm-hmm. I said, well, first of all, they'd be blown out of the sky. Secondly, they're not wanting to foist their presence on our civilization in a way that would look abrupt, that could then be used by the fearmongers to say, oh, look, we're being invaded by aliens and we need $1 trillion a year from the world economy to put weapons in space and protect the homeland. I mean, this is the kind of thing that the questioner is bringing up that's very important, and that is we have to find a way to discuss these issues without falling into, that's why I don't even use the word alien, because it has this intrinsically xenophobic and fear-based sort of connotation. I think we have to talk about these extraterrestrial people, beings, in a way that doesn't engender fear and that has the possibility of going into the future in a way that's productive. And I think that they're waiting for us to develop that capacity, and that happens both individually and then collectively. And I think they admire people working together, which is why we have found with our Sea City expeditions that there's a tremendous response from these visitors when a group of people come out and do this together. They're looking for that process of being able to interface with larger numbers of people, so it's not just an individual experience. It grows from that to a whole social event. But it's a very gentle process. I don't see that it's something where it's not surprising to me that they haven't done anything really abrupt. They've done some pretty amazing things where, you know, there have been entire cities, like in Montreal a few years ago in 1990, I believe it was, where one of these was hovering over a building downtown. I was just recently there and was with people who had actually seen it and photographed it. And you know, it's not as if they're hiding themselves, but they're measuring how much and how much exposure they make depending on whether people are ready and mm-hmm. how are they going to respond.
Yeah.
And I think the way we respond really drives how far they're going to then interact. It's like a cosmic dance, if you will. But unfortunately, as a society on the whole, we have not been very adept dancing partners yet.
All right, let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Michelle from Quebec.
All right, now let me ask, Dr. Greer, we always have problems with Michelle's phone line when he calls in, so let me ask you, can you hear Michelle?
Just barely.
I'm going to try and boost that a little bit. All right, Michelle, go ahead.
Okay, good evening, Dr. Greer.
Good evening.
I want to thank you, too, for all you've done, and I want to ask you, do you think, SETI, what has it done for the UFO ufologist and ufology? As I, to myself, it's hurt it more than anything else because it's a big money pit and no result. And I'm wondering, I know you probably don't want to talk about another organization, but what is your thoughts on SETI?
Well, my thoughts are, you're asking about SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, and I'll tell you what I know about it. I know that they have had confirmed signals that are extraterrestrial, and I have this from the most senior people at SETI. Seth Shostak denies this. I announced this on Coast to Coast AM. It would cause a flurry of controversy around the world. But I will tell you that years ago, there was a man, when they were based out at the NASA Ames Research Facility in California, there was a man who worked in the office next to the SETI project, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. And he said, and this scientist at NASA became a member of CSETI and the Disclosure Project, and he talked to one of these SETI senior officials way back then in the early 90s, and he said, look, he said, what would you say if I told you, this is the NASA scientist talking to the SETI person, that you people already know we're being visited by extraterrestrials, but you're setting up this program so that the scientific community and a lot of the public think that they're not here yet because you're still searching for them. And by virtue of searching for them, it implicitly states that they're not here yet. And that basically the whole SETI project is a big smokescreen. And this senior SETI scientist winked at this NASA scientist who's on our team and said, well, I would say that you're a very smart man if you figure that out. So that's what it was always about. It's a smokescreen.
I have another flash message here that I want to get you to comment on. It says, do you see full amnesty taking place to help the truth being brought forward, or has that time run out for this so-called shadow government?
Well, if you go to disclosureproject.org, we have already, in 1997, I believe it was, wrote a position paper talking about this very issue of amnesty. And we believe that that's already in place. And the reason we do is that there are too many people who have come forward with Disclosure Project who weren't civilian airline pilots or something. They were involved in classified projects. None of them have been punished by society, and none of them have been punished by this cabal. And I think that what I have said all along is that let's be forward-looking. Yes, there have been terrible things that have happened in the past, but we're not looking for a pound of flesh. My view of it is that one of the greatest attributes that a human being can evince is forgiveness. And there's nothing to be gained from wanting to go back to these people who kept this secret and try to extract punishment on them. For what purpose is that? I think that what we need to do is say, let's bring out this information. Let's bring out these sciences and technologies that have been kept secret for really a better part of 100 years now. And let's move forward as a civilization. And so this is not only a, I think, sound legal position. I think it's an important moral position, because I think to do otherwise is to open the Pandora's box of recriminations and countermeasures and revenge. And, you know, it's the old thing, an eye for an eye, and pretty much everyone's going to be left blind. So my view of it is that, you know, we wrote about this very openly back in the 1990s after I had made my way through the Pentagon and the CIA and the Senate and the White House on this issue. And we had concluded there was nothing to be gained from a vindictive approach to past mistakes and secrecy. Certainly they've happened. I'm not Pollyannish about it, but I don't see anything to be gained by going down that road. And so we think that it's very important that people, both from a moral and ethical point of view, and also from a legal point of view, say, let's be forward-looking and not backward-looking.
Well, and one of the things that both the Disclosure Project and Arrow represent, from my point of view, I mean, if I'm wrong, correct me, but this is my perception. You're putting so much information out there where anybody can get it. Anybody can view the videos. Anybody can read the books. There's so much information that you're putting out there that what's happening is we are sort of getting to that critical mass worldwide where people know so much about this that those who wanted to keep it secret have to realize they are beginning to fade into insignificance.
Well, that's right, but they're also embracing the idea that this should come out. They're just very afraid of doing it themselves. I'm going to say something here that's going to probably shock a lot of people.
Hold that thought for just a second, because a break is taking over and is going to cut your mic and mine off. All right, folks, we'll be back, and when we come back, Dr. Greer is going to say something that's going to shock a lot of us.
Hold my hand, I'll hold my breath. thing I'd feel is less alone. Less alone.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest, Dr. Stephen Greer. Before I get back to Dr. Greer, let me ask, caller, are you still with us? Okay, the caller is gone. All right. Dr. Greer, when we cut away, you were saying you're going to say something that might shock some people. Well, apparently I've lost Dr. Greer as well. Well, we'll try that again in just a second. The telephone number is 1-800-289-1092, 1-800-289-1092. Yeah, we've lost Dr. Greer. Don't know what happened. I guess someone decided we didn't need to be speaking with Dr. Greer. These things happen, folks. These things happen. And we'll see if we can't get him back on the line. And Dr. Greer, I don't know what happened. We apparently lost you.
I heard your beep come in and then it went dead, so
well,
I'm back.
Maybe someone decided we didn't need to talk. You were going to say something that was going to shock us, and maybe whoever it was didn't want us to be shocked. Go for it.
Well, it's funny because the story involves a guy who flew in on a jet from the CIA back in the early 90s who said, "Hurry up and get this done." I said, "What are you talking about?" And he was talking about getting disclosed. He says, "There are a lot of us who want to see that happen, but we can't do it because if we do it, it'll point the finger back on the fact that we've been keeping it secret." You see the kind of circular thinking these guys get into. And so, you know, when I briefed the CIA director, about a third of this group of about 300 people internationally who've been running this secret government programs and corporate programs dealing with this were in favor of this being disclosed. Now, I understand it's up around 70%. And what we have found is that as much as what we've been doing in the public has been key, there has been also a very important role in providing leadership to these power centers and to these classified projects, many of whom didn't know really what the agenda of the secrecy was because it's so highly compartmented. And this surprises people. I go, no, I mean, you know, people have to understand that, you know, at the top of this pyramid of 300 people, there may be 25 who really know what's going on. I mean, it's very, very tightly controlled and very secretive. I use the word cult-like advisedly. And so the issue becomes the people, can provide the leadership to help this all come out and come out in a way that is helpful and positive. And that's the kind of wisdom we need to bring to this. And I think that as we do that and articulate the reasons for this coming out and also provide leadership by our example, we will see that there'll be more and more support coming from hidden quarters, shall we say. And I think people need to put their fears aside and embrace the future in a way that is open-minded and forward-looking and let the chapters of the past just be closed down.
Let's go back to the phone line. Our final call, we'll have to make it very quick. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin. This is Gary from Lockport.
Okay, Gary, you'll have to make it quick. We're running out of time.
Okay. I think Dr. Greer, you hit the nail on the head in several instances here. True disclosure to me is not the fact that we're seeing UFOs every day of the year all around the world, and there's an intelligence beyond ours visiting this planet. True disclosure to me is the fact that there is technology available, but not being made available to the general public. That's probably 50 to 100 years ahead of what's a, that is what it's at hand here today.
Absolutely, and this is really a key point, is that I was meeting with a PR firm yesterday in Washington, and they're big-name people. They represent all kinds of top Fortune 100 companies. And I said, do you really believe that there have been no advances in energy generation in the last 150 years? Because we're still burning coal, we're still burning gas, we're still doing hydroelectric, and we're still doing, even a nuclear power plant just creates heat to create steam to turn a turbine, like in the 1800s. And so I said there have been breakthroughs, and that the secrecy around that has really retarded the evolution of human civilization, and is now is costing us the future and the biosphere and the environment of the planet. So I said it's really time to put that silliness behind us and move forward and really bring forward these sciences and technologies that can benefit all of humanity and can be used to really transform our entire civilization into what its potential truly is.
And that's really the crux of, and I would say the goal of, the disclosure is that although, you know, Disclosure Project has to do with extraterrestrials, the outpouring of it, the result of it, will be all of these technologies.
Sure. It's all of it together. It's finding our place in the cosmos. It's understanding we're not alone in this vast universe. But it's also, more importantly, understanding that the sciences and technologies are already here on this planet. And if we can just find a way to come together, the scientists, the engineers, the strategists, all the people we've located, to bring out at least the first generation of these fairly soon, and we're looking to do this in 2008, then we can move forward with a civilization that can be sustainable, peaceful, and really abundant. I mean, you look at the $30 trillion a year global economy, it's not even 10% of what it ought to be if we were to have poverty eliminated, because more than about half of the world's population lives on something like $2 a day or less. And so, you know, in order to lift, have a tide that lifts all these boats, the boat of every human soul on this planet, we're going to have to go past carbon-based fuel and coal and oil and gas, and we're going to have to allow knowledge and science and this information go forward to do the good that it can do.
You know, I lived on an island for 2 years, and it's an island called Timor.
Oh, yeah. And,
well, the minimum wage in the country of East Timor is $3 a day.
Right.
Now, when... When you say minimum wage in a country like that, that means what can I get away with paying?
Right, exactly.
And so that's what they earn. I mean, if they earn anything, they're earning $3 a day. And you're exactly right. And it's hard to believe there are countries much more poor than Timor.
That's right, and I think that we if we look at this compassionately, you know, we're fretting about $3 a gallon gas and our furnaces and our electric bills, but you know, most people don't have the proverbial pot to pee in to even worry about the price of gas. And what happens if you have 6 billion people industrializing the way China and India are, competing for that commodity and spewing the junk into the atmosphere? Well, this is silly when we have infinite energy teeming all around us from the zero point or quantum vacuum flux field or whatever you want to call it. And that's been discovered since the late 1800s and early 1900s. I have pictures of Tesla, Nikola Tesla in 1902, who had gone to Congress with Stubblefield, a farmer, who had learned how to tap into this energy field with stakes in the ground and had an earth battery, and it was running his farm in 1902. So, I mean, you know, please, don't tell me we can't do this. We just have to combine our resources and be very sophisticated, I think, strategically, in terms of how to move this forward in a way that can be successful and that learns from these errors of the past.
Give us your web address again for Arrow and Disclosure, both. We're just about out of time.
Disclosure Project, all one word, .org, because it's a nonprofit, disclosureproject.org. And then our research company for energy is AERO2012.com.
All right, Dr. Stephen Greer, I just thank you for being with us this evening. It's been fascinating. And if you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment. As I close the show, I want to tell you something. And ladies and gentlemen, there you have it, Dr. Stephen Greer. What a fascinating guest. What a fascinating, fascinating future is in store for us if we sort of follow this plan, huh? My guest tomorrow evening, Stanton Friedman, and I hope you'll be with us. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again. I'll be here tomorrow night. You'll be here, too. Until then, so long, everybody.